All right, so you ready to go?
Ready to go.
Okay, great. Your microphone is on, and I'm just going to start off by asking you, what would you promise to do in your first 100 days if you were elected mayor?
First, I feel that Charlotte has a crime problem. We do not have a comprehensive plan to deal with it. In my first 100 days, I want to form a citizens task force appointed by the mayor and working with the council to come up with a comprehensive plan. I look back on the city's documents of when was the last time we've done this, and the closest we came to it was almost 10 years ago, and it was just a very partial thing called a homicide task force. So I want to proact rather than react on public safety. The second thing is that we need real attention paid to West and East Charlotte revitalization, assuming that we do not receive state and federal funding for the transportation-only development idea called the streetcar. And I feel like you've got to have a plan B here because these areas have largely been neglected and need more attention, and I want to bring the leadership there. Get that started as soon as possible.
And the task force that you mentioned, how do you envision the task force working? What are they doing?
Like many things we do in this city, you do need enormous amount of citizens' input, but also collaborate with CMPD, collaborate with our faith community, collaborate with neighborhood leaders, and really get serious about on a ground level, how do we go about tackling some of the problems that we've been seeing? Right now, we've got more murders than we've had in all of last year. As you know, over Labor Day, we had 12 shootings, 5 people dead, 1 was a 7-year-old, and we don't have any clues. And so that is typically something that you would see be gang-related. And when we look at other cities and how they've gone about tackling this, one that I pointed towards was Boston and what they did in 1992 with a crime gang problem that they had. And they put something together called a 10-point plan. We've got frameworks of how we could go about doing this. But the point of a task force is to obviously have this be citizens-based, not government-based. And then obviously, in this case, let CMPD work with us and work with the faith community to come up with addressing the problem, as opposed to reacting, which is what you saw in the headlines today in the Charlotte Observer about what are called inclusionary zones, the police chief trying to create a zone where we can identify hotspots and try to take them, reduce crime there. We should be reducing crime in all four corners of Charlotte, and we need a comprehensive plan.
Great. And we're going to get to all that and more. But first, let me ask you, what would your leadership style be with the Charlotte City Council?
Collaborative, also working on shared priorities, working on how can we accomplish goals together around what are known as the 5 focus areas of Charlotte, which are economic development, public safety, housing and neighborhood development, the environment. These are the things that all of our council members, because that's the way our budget is driven, we have to have goals set around them. And as an organization, we're setting goals, and I want to know what my individual council members' goals are. I look at it from the standpoint of how can we work to move Charlotte forward in these areas, which we all agree. You're going to have some partisan differences on certain things, but we need to have council be much more of the person who's driving the agenda of what do we want to see accomplished in the next 2 years. And I think what I've seen over the council, having been off of it for 4 years, is just that you see the majority of things that we do are largely placed on the agenda by city staff. And then the second thing is that the council is largely, as all deliberative bodies are, is largely reactive. And so I'd like to see our council members be more proactive. I want the mayor to be more directly involved in what are our district goals. And get back to the building block planning of building a great city.
The General Assembly has recently stripped cities of some local control. How would you work to repair the relationship between Charlotte and Raleigh?
We have to place things in the context of not what's best for Charlotte, but what's best for North Carolina. In many cases, Charlotte sets the example of some things that we can do innovatively across the state. And so the first thing I would do is obviously have a relationship more formally, in this case, being a member of the party of the majority, it's certainly helpful, but it doesn't guarantee you success because, as you know, there's a lot of divide between our urban cores, which certainly we are the largest urban core, versus our rural counties. One of the things I've done throughout this campaign is I have reached out to the delegation across North Carolina so that we can begin to build a relationship more formally rather than just your proverbial one visit or two visits to Raleigh. The other thing, too, is you've got to work in unison with your 16-member delegation, which includes both, of course, the majority and the minority members of our Mecklenburg delegation. They're our voice piece to obviously carry the message for what Mecklenburg County is needing on all levels, even beyond just simply the needs for the city of Charlotte, and that would be the Mecklenburg region.
An issue that you brought up earlier, I want to talk about crime, violent crime especially. The numbers of murders is up in Charlotte. What are you going to do to combat that? I know you talked a little bit about the task force that you had formed, but what other ideas do you have?
One of the things I saw in the Boston plan that I thought was very important was the first point on their 10-point plan was adopt a gang. And one of the things that we've stopped doing is calling them gangs. We're calling them group structures. And I think that's, first of all, something we can't do. We got to obviously call the problem what it is, and it is a gang. Secondly, what we see with the success of Chief Putney and Chief Monroe and the design of Cops and Barbers was it was intended to engage the community. And it happened a little bit backwards, but at the same time, it's now turned out to be very much a positive on that. And what I've heard from the chief and others is that we have the faith community come in and out of this subject when things get hot and when they don't. And what we need is a consistent plan to where if it is the faith community that's going to help adopt a gang, but give people a serious alternative to joining any structure of that nature, because we know the path that it's going to lead to, and we want them very much a part of that. And that's, again, that's community-based. That's not top-down. That's bottom-up.
And when you say adopt a gang, can you explain that a little bit?
I know it sounds, and I don't know the full details of what Boston did, but what they were trying to do is they were trying to marry up a specific congregation with a known area type criminal unit. Uh-huh. For example, we have Hidden Valley, and the Hidden Valley Kings for many years had sort of plagued over that type of region there. Well, we've probably got 15 to 20 different houses of faith in that region, but how many of them are really willing to get arm in arm with some of these people that are a part of that? These are members of their community that may even be attending their church, and they don't even know they have members of a gang there. So again, what we want to do is we want to proact, not react. Just this past Sunday, I was at Silver Mount Baptist Church off of Arrowwood Road. This is a congregation that when I pulled up on Sunday morning, I realized I was there almost 6 years earlier with a CMPD officer who'd started a program called the Steel Creek Youth Network. It was created on her efforts and several others, but the goal was to get potential gang members and those that might be in gangs actually to come to a congregation on a Friday night. This was the alternative to going out and getting in trouble otherwise, and she simply pulled them together with food, pizza, and there was a little bit of a faith element to it as well, too. I think that's why the church was involved, but the main thing was this was the marriage between the police, the faith community, and again, obviously, the neighborhoods were very in support of it, and they weren't doing it for an enormous amount of money. But they weren't getting the kind of attention that you normally get, because it's hard to put a crime stat on how much you've prevented. And that's the piece that you've got to look at is that if we've got people that are considering gangs as their first alternative and they're not being given otherwise. The other thing, too, speaking about gangs, is that we stopped funding a federal program called Gang of One. It's a federal DOJ program that the police chief did let the city manager know that the funding was running out, and should we continue to fund this? And the recommendation was that we could fold it into other programs underneath the heading of youth engagement. Now, that's fine, but I think we've got to go back and revisit that as a city council. Do we need to get back involved and have Gang of One be a much more comprehensive part of our crime plan? And again, from a crime standpoint, we've got to determine, we're the second fastest growing city in the country. Are we well-staffed? Do we have the technology to keep up with the fast pace of what criminal activity is doing, whether it be white collar or whether it be the activity that we saw as far as flash mobs occurring and people coming uptown? Our city council found itself reacting several years ago at Speed Street. We're definitely on top of that now. But again, the pace of technology as far as crime fighting, again, we've got to find out where's Charlotte going to be on that list. Mm-hmm. So we want to be at the top. We don't want to be at the bottom on crime fighting.
Yeah. Well, CMPD is reportedly considering creating these so-called no-go zones, areas of the city where convicted felons would be prohibited from entering. The thought is that this will help cut down on crimes. Do you agree with this, or is this an overstep by police?
I think you're going to find really good arguments for both. We did do something similar to this. It was a prostitution-type zone that the chief, Chief Monroe, had put together in the Camp Green area. Again, I think city council and as mayor, I would look at it, again, with a skeptical view, because there is some constitutionality of what we're doing here. And the question is, how well is it really working? I think the goal, again, of my crime plan versus this type of tool is that is just a simple ordinance change. It still doesn't change the actual behavior. And so we've got to get back to that piece of it first. And of course, if the chief would like to see us have this, you've got to find something that the city attorney's office can obviously support so that we're not immediately under a lawsuit. So there's also that risk component to it. So I would suspect city council will probably continue to creep up to it, and I would certainly want them to bring that subject up. This really brings back to what I've talked about several times is that when I look at the last 4 years of what's been on the city council public safety agenda, as far as what they've been looking at in the actual committee, this is the only item, along with just maybe one other, where it actually dealt with dealing with crime. We've been dealing with public safety issues like noise ordinances and mobile food vendor ordinances and pedicab ordinances, passenger vehicle for hire. These are all important public safety issues, but they don't address crime. And so if you're a victim of crime, everything else a council member or a mayor is going to talk about doesn't matter if you don't feel safe in your neighborhood. So that's why I feel like it's long overdue that we get on top of putting together a plan that, that can really work and that can help the police. And if that's one tool, great. I'd love to hear three or four more other tools. Mm. I don't think we're having enough healthy discussion around it. And I'm pleased to see that we're talking about inclusionary or no-go zones. But is that a Band-Aid or is that really a solution? And I have a feeling that it's probably somewhere in between the two.
Construction of offices and high-rise condos and apartments is booming in Charlotte. And that's great for our economy. We're happy about that. But how much development is too much development?
You have to balance growth with sound fiscal policy. The amount of apartments that are being built in this construction boom that we're seeing right now certainly would give rise for concern, given the fact that what caused all this was a real estate bubble several years back. So the one thing that I think as mayor that I want to make sure that we're cognizant of is that are we looking at what will happen when this boom stops, and are we adequately providing obviously affordable housing across the city? And then I think secondly as well too is that do we have the infrastructure to support the amount that we're putting up? The other thing as well too is that Charlotte's history of basically tearing down things has not been a real positive one. I co-led an effort in my own neighborhood to create Charlotte's fifth historic district, which is just a residential district. And what I found in that process was that zoning code of historic overlay is an effective tool, not agreed, of course, upon by everyone in this city, but there's a lot of folks that want to see Charlotte protect some of the things that make it special. One that's come up that's certainly understandable, and they're going to find a new destination, is Common Market, which is one of my favorite spots in South End. And they're currently getting bulldozed over to put up some office retail. And the question is, where does Common Market go? I want to find it go somewhere wonderful and it's going to be energetic and obviously help celebrate the diversity of what the audiences of people that go to Common Market are. Those are some of the gems of Charlotte that we've been sort of just pushing over along the way. Another one that comes to mind as well, too, over in Second Ward is the Coffee Cup. It's gone. There was a huge development that went there. Where's the Coffee Cup now? This afternoon, I'm going to a restaurant over in Plaza Midwood called The Diamond, and it used to be The Diamond, but it went through a major redo. These are the kind of things that you can't tear down the historic pieces of what we love about our neighborhoods in the name of progress. We have to have a strategy that'll balance around the two, whether it's historic overlay districts, whether it's tools to basically balance growth there with that. I think you've got to look at all of those. But I do know that my city council wants to see us celebrate what makes our neighborhoods in each one of our seven city council districts with who they are. We can't look 100% uniform across the city. It would be a little bit too generic, I think.
Yeah. As mayor, how would you help the city walk that fine line between developing neighborhoods and keeping the personality and identity of a neighborhood?
I think it starts with neighborhood and business services from the city of Charlotte. We want each of our districts to reflect who they actually are and show their personality. I think you do that through a couple of different tools. Number one, clearly, you have to remove any kind of blight from a district. You have to be cognizant of the fact that you don't want to sterilize these neighborhoods, but what you want to do is you do want to celebrate their own uniqueness. And I think the neighborhood that we all see in the living room of Charlotte is Uptown Charlotte, and we've seen the evolution of how Charlotte Center City Partners brought that leadership and that focus towards what did we want the living room and the Uptown of Charlotte to look like. And as we look at the Center City 2020 Vision Plan and we look at how they wanted to connect all the neighborhoods to reflect what Uptown looks like, I want to see that type of vision being brought to neighborhoods from East Charlotte to neighborhoods like Sevierville just off of that to our great neighborhoods down the light rail line like Starmount. These neighborhoods have to continue to reflect who they are, and they can't lose their identity. Their identity only needs to be showcased more. One thing that I think that is also important, too, and we see this uptown, is just the use of infrastructure planning. And then secondly, believe it or not, public art, something that's been a big part of some of the things that people take notice to in Charlotte, is how we've used that effectively to be a tool to help us identify when you're in one region or the other. A final one that I think is just sort of personal to me is just our city's love of trees, and some of our most identifiable neighborhoods and the ones that people take people to first have these wonderful canopies of trees. And so as chair of the Environmental Committee for 4 years on city council, I knew the power of trees, but more importantly about planting trees and how they can be used to be able to shape and design a neighborhood. And when you've got a neighborhood that has an enormous amount of blight, probably one of the last things that anybody who wants to create vandalism is going to do is tear down a tree. So these are tools, again, that the city of Charlotte is already involved in. We have a full-time arborist. Mm. We have a group called Trees Charlotte that actively wants to plant trees all around this region, and they want to build more. And so it's one of these city building type tools, a tree, a public art project. A public transit station. These are the things that I love about city planning that excites me as mayor, that I want to be a part of, to see us do, and want to see us do in unison. Because again, it's not my vision to be able to try to figure out what Edwin Peacock wants in each of these seven districts. It's working with that council member to say, how does this reflect District 1 or District 2? Mm-hmm. I'm on that. Good question.
Last question. For the primaries, we ended by asking you to give us your elevator speech as to why you should be mm-hmm. mayor. And we're guessing that everyone has probably heard that by now. Okay. So we want to get a little bit more specific. Unaffiliated mm-hmm. voters represent the second largest voter group in the city, mm-hmm. and their numbers are growing really fast. Mm-hmm. So what's your pitch to those who don't care what party you come from?
I'm about fixing problems and finding solutions. And so that's reflected in what I would consider to be what my vision is for Charlotte, which is to see her reach her potential in all four corners of this city. And I see us pitting one part of Charlotte versus the other, and we can no longer do that and if we want to be successful. And so for those that are unaffiliated that may be not engaged in the race, I would ask them to be thinking about how local leadership and how that local leadership will reflect them in the city that they want. And local leadership does matter. We need strong leaders to be able to cast a vision of how we're going to achieve that through the goals and the objectives of what the city of Charlotte is known for and what we want to see as an excellent city. The final thing is just, a passion for bringing, my private sector experience with, again, the experience of public sector, of being 4 years on city council makes me uniquely qualified to be able to lead the city. In this time, we've had four mayors in 2 years. One is unfortunately in prison. And so I hope that those that were undecided, that didn't participate last time, will choose to get engaged. The truth is that apathy is the enemy of good government. And I want to see more of those voters get involved, not less. Because, again, democracy works when people get involved. It's absolutely critical. And we're at the we're at the retail level. This is not state government. This is not federal government. These are decisions that are going to be about how public safety dollars are allocated, how your solid waste decisions work, how your airport functions, what your water quality is like, what your tree canopy will look like. These are the things that people need to know are what touch them every single day. That's the importance of local government and local leaders.
You've been at this for a while now. Mm-hmm. What song do you think best describes your campaign?
Let's see here. Well, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. That's it. There we go.
That's perfect.
Edwin, still haven't found what I'm looking for. I'm still looking for the mayor's seat, and that's why that's my favorite song. Thank you, Bono.